Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing just fine, man. How awesome. Are you?
I'm doing great. I'm going to be doing a business trip here in a couple weeks and then a vacation, a much needed vacation.
So that means you might not be around for a couple weeks, is that it?
Yeah, but hey, I'm going to be staying at a hotel that's allegedly haunted, so maybe we'll have some good stories about that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
But I know you have some good guests coming up, so I don't think you'll miss me too much.
No, when you're gone, you're always missed, man.
Aw. So I think we probably have a bunch of thank yous to hand out tonight.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Let me get my list together here. You know, for anyone who's been on our Facebook page, it's obvious that we've put out the call. We just said, you know, if you're interested in helping out the show, we do have a way to donate. And if you're a first time donor, you'll actually get rewarded with a shirt. If we get a dozen orders, I can handle that. If for some reason there's a huge run on this, then we'll let you know and say, you know, it might be, you'll have to give me some time because it's a two-man operation. So it's a little difficult to, you know, just rush out a bunch of shirts, but there have been people who have donated, and the most recent ones have been Sally, Nadine, Emily, and Amy, and much appreciated. It's going to help us. We have a couple more pieces of equipment we're looking at getting, one of which hopefully will even out our sound, and it's something that all of the big podcasts use. We've been pretty small-time for most of our existence. So equipment like that was just out of our reach.
But yeah, thank you all. What are some of the places they hail from? Countries, states, where are they from?
We've had some from the US, and then we've had a couple from outside the US, New Zealand and Tasmania.
Nice. That makes me happy.
Oh yeah, it's great hearing from people around the world. And you send in a message, you think, oh, I get to talk to these podcast hosts. Well, you should see how we getting to communicate with people who are taking the time out of their day to listen to us. So, yeah, it's great.
Yeah. The internet makes the world so small. It's good. So what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight is a story about the merchant vessel Joyita.
Now, I heard Hoyita, I heard Joyita. It's whatever you prefer, right?
I don't think so.
I heard it both ways, man.
Well, did you Do you know what Joyita means?
Little jewel?
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I did was I actually watched some videos from the area and listened to how people out there pronounced it. Uh-huh. Now, you could say, well, it wasn't built in that area.
Yeah.
But I think having heard it pronounced this way, every time I've looked it up, I think it's safe to say that's just how it is.
And maybe the guy I heard talking and saying Joyita was from a different country, and that's just how he pronounced it. So this ship was a yacht? Was it a...
Originally, it was a luxury yacht,
yes,
and it was built for Roland West, and he was a director out of Hollywood who made some very strange horror films early on, such as The Monster, The Bat. You know, Lon Chaney Sr. was in The Bat. So we're talking some really old horror films, but he doesn't seem to have made too many movies, at least movies he's known for. You could say his personal life sort of interfered with his professional life.
Ah, I did not know he was a horror movie maker, so that's good to know. So this boat's built back in the 1930s?
Its construction was in 1931.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Roland West was married to actress Jewel Carmen, hence Joyita.
Nice. That makes sense.
The personal life issues are because West has an affair with another actress, Thelma Todd. And here's the interesting thing. So while it's being constructed, a Portuguese shipbuilder falls from the scaffolding and dies. Now, it's said that his wife was so distraught that she actually put a curse on this vessel.
That's interesting. Why? So because she lost her husband, now she says anyone that deals with this boat's going to have bad luck or whatever the curse consisted of, right?
So he had this longtime affair with this actress. Well, here's another interesting thing that happens in his life. In 1935, Thelma Todd is found dead in the garage of her home. So, of course, there's an investigation. Now, she was found in the car in the garage. The car had been running, and the autopsy seems to conclude that she died from carbon monoxide poisoning.
Was that suicide?
That would be accidental suicide.
Yeah.
As from what I can tell. And here's the creepy part is the door to the apartment showed signs of being kicked as if someone tried to get into the apartment.
Oh, weird. That was his mistress that was found there. Yeah.
But with the door being kicked like that, Roland West says that he was asleep and he wasn't aware that anybody tried to get into the apartment or anything like that. But this sets up a situation where possibly she couldn't get in the apartment. She didn't have the keys. So what she did was she went down to the garage and just started her car up to stay warm. And then the carbon monoxide filled the garage. And then she did have a bloody lip. Depending on where you look, you'll see that she possibly had other injuries. But when I tried to get verification, the best I could find was that she did have an injury to her lip and that it most likely came from striking the car as when she went out.
Oh.
But there were allegations that West actually killed her on the boat and then placed her in the car to make it look like it was carbon monoxide poisoning.
That's good and all, but even back then I would assume that they could see if somebody was strangled to death or something like that, but who knows? That's interesting.
You bring up a great point, and that what it is they were able to tell that she was poisoned by carbon monoxide.
So, yeah.
So it rules out the possibility that he killed her on the boat and then placed her in the car. But there is that question of if she was trying to kick in the door, which is, it's a possibility, then why didn't that wake him? Well, I've said this before on the podcast, but we had a tornado come through where I live here in Kansas City, and it took the wife two different occasions to finally get me out of that room. And of course, we had part of the roof right above that room get ripped off where you could just see into the sky. It sounds like a freight train coming through when a tornado is passing by or through. So I could say it's possible. We don't have any evidence of anyone saying, well, he was a light sleeper or he was a heavy sleeper. Yeah. We just don't know. But it sort of ties into Roland. He's the guy that has the ship built. And then there are some unfortunate circumstances that arise because of his personal life. And that pretty much cuts him out of Hollywood. He's unable to work like he used to. So at some point, he just stops making films.
And the curse strikes its first victim.
Yeah, and it's – you wonder – like people will say, oh, there's the curse of a mummy's tomb or what have you. But we don't know anything about this person, this Portuguese person who placed the curse. For all I know, she could have just been cursing.
Yeah.
And there's a difference. She could have just been to hell with this stupid boat and this stupid West character. When people suffer something like this, the loss of their husband, it has to be difficult. And perhaps – whoever witnessed this outburst from her, they took it how they took it. And that's why we have that story today, is that she cursed the ship. And maybe she said, I hope you crash and sink to the bottom of the ocean. We have no idea what kind of curse this was. I don't want to make it sound like she had this elaborate curse that she knew spells and things.
Well, if anyone drove with me just on my commute to work, they would hear a lot of cursing too. And, you know, it doesn't mean that I'm cursing everyone along 435. So, yeah,
right.
I get it. So he loses the boat and his job and everything else. So where does the boat go from there?
The boat does end up changing hands. At first, it's Roland West. And then in 1936, Milton Beacon owns the boat for a number of years. But the most important thing to know, if we want to get down to the nitty gritty to our topic tonight, is that the Joyita is sold in 1952 to a Dr. Catherine, and I'll probably butcher the last name here, Luamala. And she was a professor at the University of Hawaii. Just because you own a boat doesn't mean that you're captain of the boat. You know, people that own boats, sometimes they lease them out to other people who will make a living off of it, and then perhaps they get a cut of the profits.
Mm-hmm.
And she knows the principal character in our story, Captain Thomas Dusty Miller. In fact, most people, when I was looking up this story and trying to do some reading up on it, most people refer to him as Dusty Miller.
Yeah, just Dusty.
Yeah, so we may just call him Dusty. And he was actually living in Samoa.
So, and this is almost 20 years later, and the boat had passed through different hands. It actually had served a little bit of time in World War II. It's been used, so it's no longer quite the luxury yacht it used to be. It's a little haggard, let's say.
But I think a lot of ships do that. A lot of ships get used for different purposes, so to me, it's not that strange.
No, it's not strange. It's just, it's worn. It's been used. That's all I'm saying.
Right. You have to wonder, when it changes hands, how much work is put into the ship to assess its functional level. Like, do we know if the pipes are good? You know, that comes up later. So I don't know how much maintenance was done on this boat. You wonder, it's much like a car, I imagine, where some people take very good care of their vehicle and other people, they wait till something goes wrong.
Yeah. So Captain Miller, or Dusty, he's the captain, and he's running. He's pretty much running between two different islands, right? That's like his little trek that he does. He delivers supplies to from Samoa to a particular island that's about 2 days north.
They say that it would take about 41 hours to get there. Well, it's to the Tokelau Islands.
I just wanted you to say the name of the island.
Oh, well. Some of these things were easy to look up, and other things aren't so easy to look up.
It said that Dusty had a slight drinking problem and possibly a debt issue and possibly a wife leaving him issue.
Yeah. So as you know, we're talking about a ship that ends up going missing for a while. And so whenever there's some sort of foul play, as what's suspected here, you have to look at the principal characters involved. And of course, you look at the captain first. He's in charge. Mm-hmm. And he does appear to have some issues going on, which could make him do things that maybe he wouldn't ordinarily do, or he may not be reliable.
Yeah, exactly.
How much of a drinker is he? Is he drinking while he's captaining the ship?
Yeah.
Is he willing to do some certain things just because he does have debt issues? I mean, is he just content making the money he makes by captaining the ship, or is there possibly something else going on at this time?
And speaking of debt issues, there was a passenger on the boat. His name was Williams, I think.
And yeah, G.K. Williams.
He had a large sum of money on him because he was trading, marketing and trading copper, essentially.
That's what they say, is that he was wanting to purchase copper. And of course, this ship had a hold. They could put the anything he purchased, the ship could carry it. It had a cargo hold. The amount of money they had on him, in today's money, it would be $100,000. But maybe that's not crazy, because he is dealing with something that's valuable. But there were also rumors that he was involved in the drug trade.
Mm-hmm. So we got the captain, who might be a drinker and debt problems. We got a guy that might have $100,000 in cash on him. And then we have a third player in this play, don't we? A deckhand?
Yeah, he's Samoan, and I had trouble saying his name, so I'm just going to skip it. But he apparently had a large knife on him, and he was known to be a bit unpredictable. His he was a bit unpredictable, we'll put it that way. Maybe he had anger issues, I can't say, but that's what's been said about him. Although his parents really held out hope that they would find him again. Perhaps at this point we should talk about what happens to the ship. We've kind of talked about some of the players. There are a total of 25 people on this ship, and there's quite a mix of people. There's even two very young children aboard as well.
The list shows 16 crew members and 9 passengers, which is kind of weird that the crew members outnumber the passengers. But like, even Williams, who is the copper trader, he's listed as part of the crew because his cargo is going to be on the boat. So I don't know how accurate the crew listing is, because they have numerous seamen and engineers and 2 greasers. I mean, there's a lot of people, and I'm wondering how dedicated all these people were, or how much of a role they all played in the crew, or if they were just kind of hitching rides and were, you know, just part of the team, but not really actively doing much.
Well, I think Williams was on the crew, because he's the one that communicates before they leave port. Mm-hmm. And as far as I know, he neglects to mention some of the issues they know are the boat's having.
And so does Dusty, the captain, who, you know, knows what all the issues are with the boat. Back in the 80s, I had a Dodge Aries station wagon, a Chrysler K car, which pretty much makes it the worst car ever made on the planet. And I think I had less problems with this Chrysler K car than the number of problems that are listed with this boat. Just saying.
So that begs the question, when they actually leave, I guess you could say they leave Samoa, they're going to go to these islands. When they leave, they're only running on one engine.
Yeah.
So
the other engine's out.
I'm thinking about this thinking, okay, so it's kind of like our DB Cooper episode. You're going to jump with just one parachute. What if it fails? If you only have one engine and it fails, you're stranded out there. So you might say, well, but they have a radio. Okay, fair enough. They have a radio. They can contact help. They can get a hold of help from New Zealand. But as we find out here, this radio doesn't work very well. It has an issue, and they say its functional range is about 2 miles.
or less.
Or yeah. less. So, I mean, yeah, 2 miles is, you know, the ideal that it might reach.
The pump is also got issues. They have a backup pump set up, but it's not hooked up at all. So whenever the primary pump fails, essentially it's pumping out the water. And so if the pump fails, the boat will start to fill up with water. And they would have to go to the alternate pump to pump the water out. But if you don't do that quick enough, the boat fills up with water and you can't get to the alternate pump and get it started in time. Just something to know.
Let's say this pump fails and it starts flooding. We should add that this boat is considered unsinkable because it's very much like a cork. No matter what happens, it's just going to float. It might list to the side, but it will stay floating on the water. It'll stay afloat.
Yeah, yeah. And they have a bunch of cargo on the boat, but this boat is pretty much got a ton of issues with it. And I would suspect that Dusty is struggling for cash, so he's not going to A, fix any of the problems on the boat, or B, report any of the problems on the boat, because if he can't make a run, he's not getting paid. So he's hobbling this thing along, right?
That's a real possibility. But they know since it's a 41-hour trek to go from the one port to the other, that they should be expected in a couple of days or yeah. thereabouts. And then they don't show up.
And they don't show up. And then about 7 days later, they actually start searching for him.
Yeah, I actually think it's sooner than that.
Okay.
On October 3rd, 1955, that's when the Joyita takes off. And, of course, it was delayed because they say that the port engine clutch failed, but that makes me laugh. The boat already had other issues, as you described.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know how much I'm going to make of that. But on October 6th, that's when someone was, you know, made aware that this boat never showed up as it was supposed to.
So 3 days later, so 1 day overdue.
Yeah. So, and this is when the Royal New Zealand Air Force gets involved. For about 6-7 days, they start searching, but they have a huge area to cover to try and look for this boat. And, you know, we have this idea that, well, it's a fairly good sized boat. It's 69 feet long. But even with, you know, the New Zealand Air Force going out and looking, they're talking 260,000 kilometers or thereabouts, and they couldn't find the boat.
And then at 7 days overdue is pretty much when news agencies and big media was putting the word out, the boat's gone. So sorry, we've lost a boat.
Did you see any of these old news reports?
Yes.
They were really interesting, weren't they? They had that quick way of talking and, you know, the New Zealand Air Force is looking and, you know, it's just a sign of the times, I suppose. And they were already offering up suggestions on what may have happened.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure this created quite a buzz.
Yeah. I mean, we're just out of, you know, World War II. It's still fresh in everybody's mind. So this paranoia of the Japanese is still running around in that area, especially so close to the eastern seaboard there. You know, there's the paranoia about the Japanese. So they thought, one of the news reports says the Japanese killed the crew and pretty much blamed them for it.
You can call it racism or whatever you like, but it was very much in that the idea that the Japanese could have done this. So let's talk about what they find, because another merchant vessel, and this is 37 days later, another merchant vessel comes across the Joyita.
And it's 1,000 miles off course.
It's actually 1,000 kilometers off course.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
There's an image of this ship, and it's, they say partially submerged, but I say it's doing pretty good for a boat with it, the issues that it has, and it is listing to the side some.
I think it looks half sank.
You think so? It looks pretty sad in your opinion.
Yes.
So it looks fairly sad. It doesn't look like it's going to completely sink.
Yeah.
This is important because when they inspect the boat, there are no people on it. There are no dead bodies on it. The windows are smashed. Curiously enough, all of the mattresses are placed on the engine.
Yeah.
And on the working engine, I think, right?
Yeah.
Very strange. They say 4 tons of cargo were missing.
Which, if they were taking on water because the pump failed and they weren't quick enough on the draw to get the alternate pump up and running, they've taken on a lot of weight, a lot of water. So they would have to dump their cargo to in an attempt to get their boat to rise up a little bit, hopefully lowering the water line so they could get to the pump, or just taking extra weight off the boat so they don't sink. But does the captain know the boat's not sinkable? Does anyone know this? Or
yes, the captain does know. He understands how the boat is constructed, so he knows that it would not just sink. Let's keep going on, because I think there's something that will explain this better than whether he knew the boat was sinkable or not.
Mm-hmm.
They also say that the radio was tuned to the distress channel, the International Marine Distress Channel. So they surmise that they did try to put out a distress call. Now, as we said, the area that it could reach was a lot smaller than it should have been. So instead of being able to reach people that would be reliable and help them, you know, people you could trust, if they did put out a distress call and anybody heard it, it would have been someone pretty close by.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not line of sight, but close by enough to say, ooh, I could come help you. But we don't know if someone did do that. You don't know if they're trustworthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Could have been anybody.
Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
So this is something I've not seen brought up in any of the reading I did, but it's something that occurred to me, knowing that they did try to put out a distress call. And I have heard it said that Williams and Miller knew that there was a problem with the radio.
But they concealed it.
Right. They didn't let anyone know.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So you thinking that they put out a distress call, possibly pirates or Japanese heard them and came for them?
Well, I'm not ready to discuss this just yet. There's more information here.
No problem.
So for whatever reason, there are these Carly life rafts. There are three of them. And these are things that are – they're constructed so that they can withstand being battered against the boat constantly, you know, especially when the weather gets kind of rough. They're very durable. And I guess did you read up on these things at all?
I thought they were wooden. And there was probably just enough for them to – for the entire crew and passengers to pile into all three, but it would have been a tight fit.
Yeah, the life rafts, well, for one, if you get on a life raft, what it does is it saves you from immediately drowning or going down with a ship. But the trouble is you're still at the mercy of the elements. You're still without food possibly. But the way that they're designed is they're pretty hardy life rafts. They can be damaged. This is why they're used in areas where if they take gunfire, things like that, they can continue to be usable.
Yeah.
You have to kind of wonder. So if the life rafts are used, how do you look at it? Do you think that they were used? Do you think people piled into them?
Well, they didn't recover the life rafts. They weren't on the boat when they right. found it. So that's – I have to assume that they jumped on the life rafts because the boat was – looking like it was sinking or it was damaged enough that they just decided, well, we're not getting anywhere on the boat. So at least on the life raft, where it can, you know, paddle or something, do something, move away from the sinking boat.
Okay. The captain knows the boat's not just going to sink, even in the condition that it's in. It's going to list, it's going to be partially submerged, but it'll stay afloat. The captain knows this, right? The Carly life rafts, people can definitely get in those. And even if they're somewhat damaged, they'll still float. And it's because they're sort of made of like a bent metal, like copper. And then they put like cork around it and canvas, and then they waterproof it. And then it just floats. And it can take, like I said, it can take a lot of damage and it'll continue to work. The way I look at it is, and we need to go over one more clue before we go on, because this is something that's really haunting. So we already said that the ship was damaged. It had broken windows. Things were moved around on it. But there was a doctor aboard this boat, and his bag was found, but it had been emptied of his, you know, the items that he would have had as a physician. Those were all gone. But inside his doctor's bag were bloody rags.
So somebody obviously had been injured and was bleeding.
Yeah, it begs the question, because if they were bleeding, why wouldn't they still be bandaged? I guess I'm not sure how many people bled, or, you know, there's no way to look this up. There's no way to find out. It's just there were bloody rags inside of his doctor's bag. And so I guess what I'm getting at here is, let's say there's a scenario where the captain knows the ship's not just going to sink, but he's probably also not really in charge. And that's because the man who's got the money, who's on business, and probably the one who's got the most say-so, is Williams. And whichever way you look at it, you could say, well, he's there to do some legitimate trading, or he's there and he is involved in the drug trade. But there's cargo on board this ship. And so is Williams the type to just dump his cargo? Or is it, do they put out a distress call and someone answers, and they take the cargo and then either kill and dump these people or take some of them, and some go on the life rafts where they're just at the mercy of the ocean, the Pacific Ocean? There's any number of scenarios here that could go down, and it's all because you have people who either really need the money or are there to make money. And I would imagine that's possibly one of the driving forces here. I can't imagine that they would have just sailed off in the conditions they did, taking that much risk, unless they were out to make some money on this trip.
Yeah, their cargo was valuable, and Williams had his money on him. So there's a lot of valuable things on this boat. So they wouldn't just dump that willy-nilly.
For me, it's just odd that the ship would be in the condition it was in.
The ship looked wrecked, though. I mean, it looked... It wasn't wrecked like it ran into a wall or another boat, but it looked like it had been through hell. It looked like it had been through a storm. The top canopy area was pretty much wiped out. All the windows are busted out. Something did some damage to this boat. Or maybe it's just being out there for 30-something days in the elements just slowly deteriorated it. They also show that the boat was listing and there was barnacles and sea crap growing on it. And it was growing at the water line. So it had been pretty much they show that the thing had problems the second night into the journey. And they know this because the clocks on the boat were hooked into the engine. So every time you stopped and started the engine, it pretty much stopped and started the clock. So the engine... Now, they could have stopped and started the engine multiple times during this trip, but for the most part, it showed 10-something the second night. So they know that that's when the engines quit. And that would have been, you know, if it was a 41, you know, what was it, 41-hour trip?
Yeah, I think under ideal conditions, yeah. They expected it would take them about 41 hours to get there.
It's suspected that... It was 38 hours into the trip. Like, they just had a few hours left. So the engine stops working. Another thing that we didn't mention was the captain brought 3 times the fuel he needed. But that might be because he knew he was only working with one engine, so it had to work twice as hard, which is a normal explanation, right?
Yeah, I don't know on that. I don't know that I could say that it would work twice as hard. I think it would just limit – I would think it would just limit the amount of power they had.
It's possible, but I just assume that that would be one reason to bring extra fuel along. Or you're bringing extra fuel along because you're going to make a unplanned rendezvous with somebody. I don't know. It's an idea. But they had issues right before they made it to the island, their destination. And their boat pretty much half sank from that point on because of the barnacle growth on the boat. So I know the boat won't sink, but if it's listed, you know, almost 60, 70 degrees and it's half submerged in water, that's not going to be real comfortable for 25 people.
Well, none of it's going to be comfortable from then on out, even the life rafts.
Yeah, but for 25 people to be sitting on top of this boat would be pretty crowded. So I could see why they would hop on the life rafts, because at that point, they're not going to stick with the boat. They're, you know, they're going to have more room on the life rafts. But I don't know. That's just something to think about. So do you want to get into your theories or what?
Well, let's talk about the popular theory.
Okay.
And the popular theory, if anybody looks this up and you type in MV Joyita solved, there's someone out of New Zealand named David Wright, and he's actually a relative of someone that was on the boat. Mm-hmm. They say it's his mother's cousin, was one of those who went missing. But he says it's because of the pipe. And it's because the boat was filling with water that this is why they ended up needing to get off the boat.
It's a very straightforward explanation.
But he says that the key is that they mistakenly believed that they had sent out a distress call. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make any sense to me because, as far as I know, both Williams and Dusty Miller knew that the radio wasn't working correctly. Where's the issue here?
Here's how I interpret it. And I didn't actually know that that guy had his theory, but.
Well, no. Well, all right. Did you didn't look up his theory?
No.
Okay.
Didn't.
Well, so what he says is, so they got onto the life rafts, the Carly life rafts.
Yeah.
And that one by one, they ended up dying, drowning, eaten by sharks, you name it.
Yeah.
The reason why he thinks it went this way is because of the things that were taken from the ship, okay, which include the logbook, the chronometer, mm-hmm. and of course the firearms. So he actually thinks that the captain was forced off the boat, that the firearms were used to encourage him off the boat as well.
I can see that, yeah. But I guess before we even get into the Japanese or pirates or anything else, I don't assume malice when incompetence seemed to be running rampant with this boat and its crew. And it's pretty insane to me that with 15 crew members, none of them were in the know that this boat had so many problems. And they say that the pipe was rusted, corroded, just not in good shape. And the pipe is what started leaking water into the hull of the ship. And they couldn't get the other, they couldn't get the pump really wouldn't work at that point because it's trying to pump through a pipe that has a leak. And so even the alternate pump doesn't really matter at this point. I mean, they could try to get it running. So what I think happened is this pipe gives away, starts filling the boat up. They can't get the pump going, or they're trying to get the pump going. Maybe the captain stuck his hand down in the water, tried to get the other pump going, and cut himself. That's what explains the bloody bandages. And from there, the boat's sinking, essentially. But I know it doesn't sink all the way. But they dump the cargo, or possibly take some of the cargo with them, trying to get the boat to stay afloat longer. But eventually, they resort to getting on the rescue boats. And maybe at that point they realize that the captain is the reason why they're in this predicament. They realize that the captain did not tell them that the boat had so many problems. The captain's acting like the radio's working, but it really doesn't. So maybe they're pissed off at him and take him at gunpoint and say, "You're coming with us. We'll eat you later when we're starving." I think it's a very straightforward explanation. I think that guy's dead on.
You think David Wright is correct?
I think he's pretty close. I would take his explanation over pirates or Japanese.
Yeah, it's just kind of odd because of the way that it says that they believed that there was a distress call sent out, but the captain knew the radio wasn't transmitting, and then that's how it goes. I mean, they just, as you say, you think they discovered that he's the reason why they've had all these problems. So you think possibly they killed him or what? If they lose faith in their captain, I mean, there's different ways to go about that. I don't think that with the Carly life rafts that they're just going to be able to hold him captive, you know?
No, or maybe they all left willingly and got on the life rafts with the captain. You can go, okay, they killed him and dumped him, or you could say, well, they all got on the life rafts because at that point the cargo doesn't mean as much anymore because they're trying to save themselves. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if the boat's sinking, first they try to dump some cargo so the boat doesn't sink as fast, and then they get on the life rafts and hope they're found because they can do better on the life rafts. At least they're out of the water instead of halfway in the water on the listing boat. But spotting a life raft in 200 something square miles of ocean is going to be pretty hard. So I think they all died at sea.
Yeah, and just think about how difficult it would be to find that cargo. Okay, so under your scenario, they would have had to have dumped the cargo.
Pretty much, yeah.
No, because where else would it go?
Yeah, they're not going to take it on the rescue boats unless the captain, either it's a mutiny or it's a reverse mutiny, and the captain and Williams are like, "Oh, we're taking the cargo. See you guys later." And they fill up the rescue boats with the cargo and take off. But I don't think that's going to happen.
The tricky part for me is the whole idea that they get into these life rafts. And I don't, trying to make sense of why they would do that and dump their cargo and get in the life rafts, because they're not going to be able to just get to their destination. They said that they were about 9 hours. There was 9 hours of darkness ahead. They had all night long to get through.
But we don't know when they got in the life rafts.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, Do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
We don't know if they got into them 3 days in to trouble or 20 days into their trouble, you know?
What do you mean 20?
How long was the boat missing for?
Well, the boat was missing for 37 days.
Okay. They could have jumped on those life rafts on 36 days. We don't know. We don't know when they did that.
I guess part of the issue here is I don't know how much food they had aboard. They were only expected to be gone for a couple of days.
Yeah.
So I don't know what kind of – and if they have that many people aboard, that's a lot of people to feed.
Yeah. People are going to be dying pretty quick.
I don't think they would make it that long at 36 days. I understand what you're saying because they don't have a survivor to say, oh, we made it 12 days. Mm-hmm. Because maybe they were just floating in this unsinkable ship and thought, well, we're not able to get where we need to go.
Yeah.
That's the question you have to answer is, was this ship's engine capable of moving this boat at least in the direction it needed to go?
If it's completely – I mean, when seriously, look at the picture. It's half submerged. The engine's not going to run when it's underwater. The engine was completely underwater. The front end of the boat and about halfway down was out of the water. I mean, it's not like the whole thing was just sitting there. It was half submerged, and it was mostly the engine that was submerged. So, you know, you ever run your car through a big, deep puddle? If you do it and you get deep enough, your engine's going to die because it's pumping water, not air. So I think they probably kept it going for a while, which explains the mattresses, because if the engine's starting to get underwater, it's going to kick water up. And they say that there was an electrical panel there, and maybe they were trying to get, you know, keep the splash down from the electrical panel by the running the engine with the mattress on top of it. There's different things. I think they were in a desperate situation and cargo went out the window. And they tried to get it going, but after maybe 2 or 3 weeks, they decided, this isn't working. We're going to go on the life rafts. And if you ever saw the movie Unbreakable or read the book, they lasted over 47 days out there. But okay. There was only 3 guys. And it was the record, the longest anyone's ever lasted on a life raft.
Well, I'll just say this. I think if you're looking at this objectively, I think the most likely cause is that, like you said, incompetence. The condition of the boat, from what I understand, was it was an ill repair. It was not being maintained. Mm-hmm. So you're saying, you know, we're going to travel for 2 days in this boat that's, you know, it can stay afloat, but can it really get to where it needs to go? That's the real question. And I think you get out there in the ocean, it's not a very forgiving environment.
No. And it was the wet season. So there were huge storms going on. We don't know if they were in the path of those storms, but it was the wet season.
I think most people will say with the bloody rags that there could have been an attack. But the clue to me is that the rags were inside the doctor's bag.
Yeah. And he could have been just switching out somebody's bandages that hurt themselves.
Well, but then they would wonder why his tools weren't in there. But for me, I think if people were attacked, the doctor wouldn't be able to help anybody if they were being attacked.
No.
So I think for me, that's one of the keys here is not just the ill state of the ship, but the doctor's bag being found like that.
Yeah, because if it was pirates, what did they do? Leave? I mean, come back and let doctor bandage somebody up, or did they take them hostage and let them, you know, it's kind of iffy on that.
Ideally, we wish that people would leave a message. You know, we talked before about Roanoke.
Yeah.
And they had the missing colonists, but you know, they even attempted to leave a couple of messages and that didn't help anything. It's very difficult to know how to leave a message, I suppose, when you're making decisions. You're just trying to think about how to save people. You're not thinking about, oh, we're going to die. We better leave a message so this won't be a mystery for the next 50 to 100 or beyond years. To me, it's very explainable in the fact that it's just they started out bad and it got worse.
Yeah, and this captain should not have taken this boat out. I mean, just the other day in Kansas City, there was a party bus that they were loading in a cooler into the back and they didn't secure the back door because maybe the latch was broken and the door ajar, light was burnt out. There were so many problems with this party bus and this woman fell out and died. Well, now the owner of this party bus is being held liable and sued and told your bus is not even fit for the road, so you can't drive it. And essentially, that's what happened here, is this boat was not seaworthy at all. But he took it out anyways, and they paid the price. And curse or no curse, you don't take your chances.
So as I said, even the writer here says that the captain knew this boat was unsinkable, but it has to be stressed. Just because it's not sinkable doesn't mean it's necessarily a good idea to stay on it.
Yeah.
It's difficult because when you get on the life raft, now you don't have any engine.
No, no.
The real unanswered question for me is the whole radio situation. Did they really expect to be found, or was this the ship's getting worse and worse. We'll get in the life rafts. Hopefully by now someone has put out the distress call and they'll fly overhead and find us.
Yeah.
Because I can't think of anything else that works if they did make it into the life rafts.
And you can't expect them to make very clear, conscious decisions at this point. I mean, if they've been at sea for, say, 10 days without food and water, they're in a desperate state.
So this might be disappointing for some people who are hoping that that pirates did it, in our opinion, or that the Japanese or the Russians had come along submarine.
I forgot the Russian element.
But here's the thing is, you know, you can come up with all these great theories, but we always talk about the simplest explanation. It's usually the correct one. And that's, you know, as you said, it start out incompetent. I mean, where do you expect it to go? I mean, how much can luck factor in here? Obviously, everyone's gone. The 25 people are gone. They've never been found. So luck never entered into it.
No, I 100% put this on the captain for him covering all the issues with it. He would be held liable if he was running a party bus today.
So no curse, just people that are cursed by having this captain.
Yeah, exactly.
And by being on this particular ship run by this captain. Because if it had been maintained properly, we wouldn't be talking about it probably, would we?
No, no.
So get your oil changes, people. That's what I say. Get your oil changes done. You know, check your tire pressure. Check your fluid levels.
Check your pipes.
check the pipes. Check your hoses.
It's just sad that they had to, all these people had to perish because of essentially maintenance and upkeep and somebody's bad decision.
Yeah, it does come down to the captain because, as I said, you know, William seems to have understood some of the problems with the boat, but who knows what the captain's telling him? You know, here he has this guy with all this money aboard. He's probably putting on a game face just saying, hey, it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
I do this all the time. I've been with this boat for a little while. I know this boat. We'll be fine. But it's just interesting that in all of the speculation I've read, everyone says that it's the captain that gets injured. You wonder if he just got decked, you know?
Well, yeah, he could have been attacked. Somebody, you know,
punched him.
Well, you know, it's like in The Walking Dead when they figure out that the one guy isn't actually a brainiac that's going to save the world, you know, and here comes the truth, and then they get mad. maybe there was a reveal like that for the captain and they couldn't, you know, they figured out that that radio didn't work.
MV Joyita possibly solved then.
There you go.
Incompetence. But it's still a neat story because, you know, I enjoyed when I was reading up on this, I enjoyed reading up on the director and his personal issues with the affairs and just how he had this blossoming directorial career going for him. And he sort of sunk himself in that regard. And then he had this ship, which goes on to not have a very good go of it either. It becomes disappointing. So I suppose that's just real life right there.
Yeah.
There's no curse necessary.
We didn't even go into the other theories, but I don't think it's really necessary.
The other theories, yeah. There are other theories, but I mean, the last thing that happens to the ship is that she runs aground in 1959.
Who owns it then?
David Simpson. He's a Fiji Islander.
And it's pretty much kaput after that.
There are all sorts of troubles with this ship. I mean, legal issues and obviously running aground. Yeah, it actually damaged the ship and the pumps just couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
And it's because they weren't installed properly. But yeah, when you're pumping water into the ship, you don't need some sort of conspiracy at this point. You just, this is just how it works. You're pumping water into your own ship and that's all. And it's damaged. So anyway, the ship doesn't end well, and neither does anyone else who's associated with this, I don't think. So good riddance, I suppose, to this little jewel. Not much of a jewel, I would say.
More of a lemon.
One owner had hoped to turn it into a museum, but that never came to be. And one last note, though, it's typically commonplace after about 7 years for New Zealand to declare people, missing people dead.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still missing.
Interesting.
They're not declared dead as far as I'm aware. And have you seen anything on this?
There was in 2012, there was a closure ceremony for the surviving families, but I don't know if they were declared dead or not. But there was a ceremony held then.
The problem was since they did this ceremony in Samoa, you know, the Samoan prime minister was there, but they don't have, I guess, the jurisdiction to legally state that these people are deceased.
Yeah.
But it shows that I think you can't do better than this. It just seems like the families were hoping for this to happen, for them to be declared deceased. It's been so long. I mean, we're talking 1955 and it's now 2015.
Yeah.
Well, that's 60 years, right?
Yep.
So I would venture to guess that there is no hope now.
No. It's sad.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Business can mean a lot of things. For some, it's earning reports, the top MBA program, investments, but business isn't everything we do. Side hustles that explode into the next billion-dollar company.
I need to create my own product that I control what the marketing is for.
Unconventional ideas that change the world we live in.
AI is everywhere, with venture capital pouring in.
From Elon Musk,
he took a massive axe and swung it through Twitter's workforce.
To Taylor Swift,
she is unstoppable as her Eras Tour stimulated local economy.
your favorite coffee shop down the street, to the vacation house you rented last weekend. Whatever business means to you, Wondery is the destination for business podcasts. Listen to top business shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Everything from top daily news.
There was more ranch dressing sold last year than ketchup and barbecue sauce.
We're buying the dip, literally.
To deep dives on the biggest successes and failures of our time.
20,000 people lost their jobs.
Wondery means business.